Saturday, April 9th, there is to be here in Kalamazoo a citizens' conference on the needs of children and youth in southwestern Michigan. This conference is one of several being held not only in Michigan, but throughout the United States and its territories. Here in the studio with me are David B. Pritchard, District Consultant for the Michigan Department of Social Welfare, and Mrs. L. E. Mills, Kalamazoo College, and a member of the Governor's Youth Committee, sent to Washington last year to meet with representatives of other state groups to lay the groundwork for the 1950 White House Conference on Children and Youth. Well, Mrs. Mills, will you tell us something of the origin of these conferences on children and why April 9th is such an important day, not only for those interested in children in Kalamazoo and southwestern Michigan, but also to the children's program in the United States as a whole?
As you know, Dr. Dunbar, since 1909, every 10 years, the President of the United States has called a White House Conference on Children and Youth. Many remarkable advances have been made as a result of the pooling of the expert thinking of those interested and experienced in meeting the needs of children in the United States. Time permits only the mention of one big accomplishment coming directly as the result of these White House conferences: the establishment of the Children's Bureau in 1912, which has forwarded such progressive moves as better child labor laws, mothers' pensions, and so forth. It was this organization, now part of the Federal Security Agency, which, in cooperation with the National Commission on Children and Youth, called together representatives, about five from each state, not only from the 48 states, but also from the District of Columbia, Alaska, Hawaii, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. This conference on state planning for children and youth made many constructive suggestions toward an excellent White House conference in 1950. The one most important to us today is that there should be state conferences on children and youth. In Michigan, this was held in Lansing last November, and that this conference should be followed by district conferences throughout the state. Of utmost importance are these local conferences, because contrary to previous White House conferences, which were planned at the top and suggestions sent to local committees to execute, this White House conference will be in reality one planned by the citizens at the local or grassroots level. So in the very real sense of the word, this conference, April 9th, will be planning for the National White House Conference in 1950. Mr. Don Dolan, Western Michigan College, is a chairman of the Committee of Representatives from each of the counties of southwestern Michigan that is sponsoring this conference.
All right, Mrs. Mills. Now, Mr. Pritchard, suppose you tell us something about the program for April 9th.
Well, Dr. Dunbar, this April 9th conference will start at 10 a.m. with Dr. J. Byron Nash of New York University as the first speaker. At 11 a.m., there will be 20 different groups under the leadership of outstanding discussion leaders from all sections of the state. These groups will be concerned with exploration of pertinent problems affecting the general welfare of children in this section of the state. The speaker at 2 p.m. will be Mr. Robert F. Stedman, now Controller, Department of Administration of Michigan State Government. Following Mr. Stedman, there will be meetings of representatives from each of the counties of southwestern Michigan, with the chairman from each county participating in a broadcast over WKZO at 3 p.m.
Well, Mrs. Mills, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about the two speakers that Mr. Pritchard has just mentioned.
Well, briefly, Dr. Nash is outstanding for his great interest in children, nationally famous for his leadership in youth movements, and a most inspiring speaker. Mr. Stedman, a comparative newcomer in state government in the position of Controller of the Department of Administration, was formerly with Wayne University.
Well, now, Mr. Pritchard, who can attend this conference?
The meeting is being held in Lincoln School at 912 North Burdick Street, and everyone interested in children and youth is invited to participate in the conference. There is a small registration fee of 25 cents per person, which will be used to pay part of the expenses of the conference.
Thank you, Mrs. Mills, and thank you, Mr. Pritchard, for telling us about this very important event. Let me introduce now three members of the class: Melba Manning, Dick Gerstner, and Marilyn Peters. Well, Melba, what did you learn out of this project?
Dr. Dunbar, before we started, I didn't know the difference between a bulb or a shrub.
But after helping to plant 1,700 bulbs, I certainly can appreciate every garden that I see now.
Well, that certainly is a fine advantage from this project. Well, Dick, there was some painting of adjacent buildings involved, wasn't there?
Oh, indeed there was. It took 9 fellows and 1 afternoon's work to paint a neighboring garage. And incidentally, most of us wore brown spots for a week. Fortunately, the fence we erected needed no paint.
Well, good enough. Well, Marilyn, how did you start in? Did you just start planting shrubs and bulbs and things?
Oh, no. We had to follow quite a bit of work to do. We had to clear the ground and level it, and then follow surveyor's stakes to make our walk, which was quite a job.
Rather an intricate pattern.
Yes, it was.
Well, I suppose you learned something about surveying, too, then, didn't you?
Yes, it's quite intricate.
Well, now, we're very glad to introduce to our radio audience now the teacher of the class, Mrs. Laurie Harvey. Mrs. Harvey, tell me, were there any other youth groups that won prizes in this contest?
We're very proud that out of 24 organizations that winning prizes in the United States, ours was the only group of young folks. And also, they were the only group in Michigan to win recognition.
Well, that's quite a wonderful record. It brings a distinction to Michigan and also to Kalamazoo. I want to express to you, Mrs. Harvey, and to you representatives of the class, our sincerest congratulations on the honor which you have brought to yourselves and to your city, and also what you've contributed towards the beautification of our art center and our city of Kalamazoo. Good evening, friends. The protracted efforts to rescue little Kathy Fiscus from the well into which she had fallen and the major buildup it got in the news are somehow reminiscent of something that happened 25 years ago in the year 1924. Many of you may remember the name Floyd Collins. He was an obscure young Kentuckian who had been exploring an underground passage 5 miles from Mammoth Cave, looking for something that might attract tourists. Some 125 feet from daylight, he was caught by a cave-in, which pinned his foot under a huge rock. So narrow and deep was the passage that those who tried to dig him out had to hitch along on their stomachs in cold slime and water, and pass back from hand to hand the earth and rocks which they had pried loose with hammers and blowtorches. This went on for 18 days, but only a few people might have heard about it if W.B. Miller of the Louisville Courier-Journal had not been a small man, daring, and an able reporter. He wormed his way down the tortuous passage to interview Collins, described the efforts to rescue him in vivid passages, and so got the whole country talking about it. When Miller arrived at the cave, he found 3 men at the entrance, casually wondering how long before their friend could extricate himself. 2 weeks later, there was a city of more than 100 tents there, and milling crowds that had to be restrained by barbed wire fences and state troopers. Floyd Collins was dead when they finally got to him. But for over 2 weeks, the newspapers made Floyd Collins and the struggle to rescue him a saga. At almost the same time as the Collins story, there was a cave-in in a North Carolina mine in which 71 men were caught, 53 of whom were killed. It attracted no great notice. It was just a mine disaster. Probably while the eyes of the nation have been riveted on the plight of Kathy Fiscus, hundreds of other human beings have been killed or maimed through accidents. Yet they were ignored. We all know of the terrible toll in life and limb from traffic accidents. These statistics often are published. We hear that so many hundred or so many thousands lost their lives in accidents, but the statistics somehow leave us comparatively cold. It is only when a particular human being, a Floyd Collins or a Kathy Fiscus, is in trouble, and when the fact is brought to our attention in the news, that we get concerned. Now really, that doesn't make much sense. Such a case gets public attention partly by accident. An alert news reporter writes a good story on it, which radio stations and newspapers pick up. Usually this happens when the news is in the doldrums, when those who have to publish a newspaper or put on a radio newscast are rather desperate for newsworthy material. Assuredly, it is rather silly to make so much fuss over one person when there are hundreds or thousands of others that are suffering tragedy. But somehow, it's rather symbolic of the way we Americans look at things. We can't get excited about human beings in the mass. Rather, it's the one human being caught in the toils of circumstance that attracts our interest and our sympathy. If they have any desire to understand how the American mind and the American heart function, the Russians might do well to ponder upon Floyd Collins and Kathy Fiscus. Good night.